Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Wir alle wissen, dass Bewegung sehr wichtig ist. Für Selbstbewusstsein bis Achtsamkeit. Das ist der Grund, warum sich Elle und Nike auch für die dritte Staffel von Why I Move zusammengetan haben. Ein Podcast rund um das Thema Frauen, Wellness und natürlich Bewegung. Also gönnen Sie sich eine Pause, atmen Sie tief ein und hören Sie Why I Move.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Estás escuchando The Fifth Floor.
The Fifth Floor dinliyorsunuz. Bizimle kalın.
Tumya Ektay, The Fifth Floor, Farnak Amidi Sobat.
This is The Fifth Floor, at the heart of global storytelling with BBC journalists from all around the world. I'm your host, Farnak Amidi. We live in a hyper-connected world where we are on messaging apps and video calls with people all over the world. So it can be hard to imagine that there are many people out there who don't have access to our regular means of communication, or they simply are hard to reach. So how do you send them a message? Let's say they have no internet access, their phones are tapped, and their mail is controlled. Or what if they just don't have time for you? What about a message in a bottle? I know it might sound like something out of a storybook or a movie, but in this episode of The Fifth Floor, we are talking about people who are sending messages in bottles, literally and figuratively, to people who can't be reached. There's a stretch of the Yellow Sea that sits between South and North Korea, lapping the shores on either sides. The wind blows across the water, forming ripples and waves. The water is a dark, tumultuous gray. The underwater currents are strong. These choppy waters have become a way to deliver precious information. Every month, a group of volunteers gather on the shores on the South Korean side. They throw plastic bottles into the sea and watch them float into the distance towards North Korea. Each plastic bottle contains three potentially life-changing things.
Rice, a dollar bill, and a USB stick.
This is Rachel Lee. She's a journalist with BBC Korean, and she's been spending time with these activists. Many of them are North Korean defectors, and they are led by a man called Park Jong-un.
Mr. Park is a man in his 50s, and he's actually a very friendly guy. He's a father of two children, and Park himself is actually a North Korean defector, too. He told me he left North Korea in 1999, and he spent 2 years in China and finally settled in South Korea in 2001. And he left North Korea with his entire family.
Tell me about this operation, this message in the bottle operation. How does it work?
So Park Jong-un, twice a month, he heads out to the Yellow Sea, which is the West Sea of the Korean Peninsula, armed with 2-liter plastic bottles filled with supplies such as rice, a dollar bill, and a USB stick. Now, he calculates the currents, ensuring that when he releases those bottles, they'll be propelled towards their intended destination, which is North Korea, specifically Hwanghae Province.
So tell me, what happened that made him start sending these bottles to North Korea? And why bottles? How did he come up with that idea? It's just so bizarre.
Right. Park's journey began back in 2015, And what initiated Park's mission was a missionary who frequently traveled to China. He shared a story of a people in Huang'e province who are starving. And Mr. Park thought it was really weird because Huang'e province is where the rice is mainly produced in North Korea. So he started sending bottles since then to help people living in Huang'e province. Now, he said he recalls seeing discarded cans and bottles from the south during his vacation to beaches in North Korea's East Sea. So he translated this vision into the Yellow Sea, which is the west part of the Korean peninsula, and he researched sea currents, and he also took advice from locals to ensure the success of his bottle sending. So by including the rice in the bottles, Park hopes to not only help starving people there, but also convey a message of solidarity. Now, he says personal computers and mobile phones are now widely supplied in North Korea. It makes them feasible to access the USB content.
Can you just explain what's on that USB?
They include some episodes of a global hit Korean drama that featured North Korea crash landing on you. You might have heard of it. Crash Landing on You is actually a South Korean romantic comedy drama. And it's about a paragliding woman. She's a very rich woman, and she drops to North Korea because of the paragliding, which people say it's unrealistic, but still. And then she encounters an army officer in North Korea who decides to help her hide in North Korea. So it's like a love story between those two. And also news clips also goes inside the sticks, where it shows how other countries evaluate North Korea. And also there are music and Bible sometimes. He believes that these content could enlighten people living in the closed society.
So is he a well-known figure in South Korea? Because he's not only sending bottles to North Korea, he's doing way more to help North Korean defectors.
That's true. Actually, Park has an older brother. His name is Park Sang-hak. He's actually one of the most prominent figures in North Korean activism. He's actually known for sending propaganda leaflets to the North. Now, this made Park brothers relatively well-known compared to other North Korean human rights activists. But the controversy also follows because in June 2020, South Korea's government passed a law which criminalized the sending of anti-Pyongyang, anti-North Korea propaganda leaflets to the North, citing concerns for the safety of border residents and the need to improve inter-Korean relations. And now Park and his brother and other North Korean human rights organizations, they swiftly challenged the law. Park himself also faced allegations, but he was ultimately declared innocent after the Constitutional Court struck down the law in September 2023.
And it is potentially very risky for North Koreans to access this kind of information and, for instance, getting these bottles.
Mm-hmm. It's true. But Park still sees the act of sending bottles to North Korea as a means to awaken its people to the realities of the world. And now he says that under the North Koreans' tight control of information, Park believes that exposing North Koreans to outside perspectives is very crucial.
So, Rachel, I understand that you went with Mr. Park on one of his missions. Tell us, how was it? What did you see?
I went along with Park sending the bottles on April 9th. And it was his first time sending the bottles in the bright daylight since the constitutional ruling, when the South Korean government decided to ban people sending leaflets to North Korea. He just didn't want to cause any trouble. He didn't want a conflict with the locals living in the border village. And that's why he decided to go send the bottles in the dark since then. When they struck down the law in September 2023, he still sent the bottles secretly at night for a few months because he was worried that if he started sending the bottles immediately after the ruling, his actions might attract too much attention and controversy. So he kind of, Mr. Park kind of looked anxious with his colleagues. There were like 4 or 5 colleagues helping him to throw the bottles. And there were also police officers and Marine Corps and Army monitoring and checking what they're sending, because it's not against the law, but they still need to monitor whether there's a sensitive items inside. So they were just checking there. And they brought 200 bottles at that time, and it took them like 10 or 15 minutes to throw the bottles.
So until recently, he was just sending these bottles and he had absolutely no idea if it was reaching people. But then all of a sudden, he got a message that his bottles were received by someone.
Yeah, it's actually a story of a recently defected family of 9 in May 2023. A mother of the family, she revealed that they had received bottles when they lived in North Korea. And she said she used rice to prepare meals and she tasted it and she thought it was really good. The quality of the rice was really good. So she sold some in the market to generate income. So this story reached Park through another defector who expressed the family's gratitude for the life-saving assistance.
Mm-hmm. And this family was able to leave North Korea.
Right. They left North Korea in May 2023 by a boat. They actually said they lived in Hwanghae province, which Park aims to send the bottles to. So yeah, so that was quite interesting. Mm-hmm.
So I bet Mr. Park must be super happy about this to finally realize that, okay, these bottles I've been sending for almost 10 years to North Korea, it is actually doing something.
Yeah, he said he felt really glad to listen to the family's story.
Oh, 명소처, 근데 우리가 보내는 게 쉽지, 받는가 안 받는가.
And he also told me that he will continue to commit to his mission.
Rachel Lee from BBC Korean and the extraordinary story of Mr. Park and the messages in bottles he's sending to North Korea. In these times of 30-second reels and videos and the constant stream of news and information on social media, no wonder why research suggests that most Gen Z around the world have a shorter attention span. So how can you get your message through to them or engage with them? Madina Dahiro Mishanu, the youngest presenter at BBC Hausa, knows a thing or two about this. She presents a groundbreaking TV show that speaks directly to people in their 20s. Here is Madina in action.
Sunana Madina Dahiro Mishanu, a cikin shirin Mahangar Zamani. Idan ana maganar matan da suka fice a siyasa a Najeriya, dole ne ka ambato gambusawa ba. Prison, kurkuku.
I have no idea what she's saying, but I do like her style. So I decided to give her a call and ask her to tell me more about the project.
The title of the show is Mahangar Zamani, which means the perspective of today's society. That's the direct translation. But what it really means is how the people in our society live their lives, the problems that we face in our societies, and essentially the solutions to these problems.
So tell me, you know, everybody's talking about how successful you've been in engaging the younger audience, and we all know how tricky they are. Hard to please. So tell me, what's your secret, Madina?
I mean, for me, I think what the secret is, touching taboo subjects, subjects that usually other people would try to run away from or try to avoid because of the conversations that it will stir up. But we go neck deep into these kind of topics because we focus on the impact. We try to look at the bigger picture. So if you touch subjects like this, what will happen? Conversations will start happening. People will try to bring up solutions to these problems. And then you have impact.
So when you say taboo topics, what exactly are you talking about?
My target audience is usually Hausa-speaking people, And the northern part of Nigeria is a very conservative region. So there are so many topics that people don't really like talking about, like marital problems and stuff like that. So if we don't talk about these things, how are we going to have a better society? How are we going to get solutions to our problems?
So you mentioned, like, you know, some of the taboo topics that you talk about, maybe sex and marriage. Can you just tell me, how do you go about talking about it? Because I can imagine with an audience that is conservative and traditional, you have to really be careful about how you tackle these topics so that they don't get offended or they would allow their daughters to listen to it.
So let me give you an example. So one of the first episodes I did on the show was aphrodisiacs. And aphrodisiacs is something that a lot of people use from this side of the country. Not only this side of the country, the whole country. So, but the thing is, with traditional aphrodisiacs, it comes with a lot of issues because sometimes people don't really know what are in these things.
So from what I understand, Medina, aphrodisiacs are usually recommended for women who are married. Why is that? What is the cultural context? Because, like, you know, I come from Iran, and the thing with when you get married, one of the main duties of a woman is to sexually satisfy and please the man. And it always is, if anything goes wrong in that marriage sexually, then the woman is to blame. So women are always constantly looking for ways to make sure that they are top of their game.
Yeah. As you said, they are usually recommended for women. Men too take them, but women more. Because in our society, a lot of people see it as a one-way thing. The woman should take these things to enhance, you know, the sexual pleasure. What I did with one of these episodes where we spoke about aphrodisiac is that I brought a doctor and I brought a lady who sells aphrodisiacs. So I basically put them there together and, you know, I let them ask themselves, like, okay, you said you're a doctor. What do you mean by this, this, this? And then the doctor also asked the aphrodisiac seller, do you know what you put inside your aphrodisiac? So stuff like that. But at the end of all this back and forth, we arrived at the conclusion. People started becoming more aware. People started asking more questions. People started being more careful about them. Do you understand what I mean? So that is one example. And then another example of a subject that people think is like taboo is divorce. So we did a topic with two women who are both divorcees. And the fact that a lot of women become stranded, basically. So they use the opportunity to advise women on how to move on from your divorce, how to start a business, how to become a woman of your own, how to be able to finance your life if you were not working when you were married, how to basically stand on your feet after you've been down. So that topic was also one of the topics that trended a lot. A lot of women benefited from that. A lot of women reached out to those two women to get advice, and they used a lot of the advices that they, you know, mentioned or gave them in the show on how to become stronger.
So tell me about yourself a little, Medina. How did you get into journalism?
So for me, journalism is something I would say I inherited. My dad was a really good journalist. He still is a journalist. And my mom was an aspiring journalist, even though she didn't get to practice. So, and since I was like 3 or 4, I used to sit down and mimic TV presenters, you know, and try to like do my own little shows at home. And I was really interested in it. So when I finished my secondary school, I was in Sokoto State, which is a state in Nigeria. The university in the state didn't offer mass communication. So, and it wasn't really a conventional thing to like send a 16-year-old all the way to another state, a state where she did not know anyone. But my parents were like, no, we know she wants to be a journalist. And that university offers mass communication all the way in Kaduna. So when I went there, I learned a lot. I graduated and then I was lucky to do my youth service in the BBC. I started to focus on taking stuff from the radio and creating social media content so that I could engage the youth.
Tell me about some of the hurdles you had on your path. I know you have very supportive parents, obviously, but any challenges or hurdles on your way, especially as a young woman trying to push your career forward?
You know, in the society that I come from, women are not really known to be too vocal. So if you are too vocal and you are in the midst of many men, maybe you're like one or two women in like 10 men, it kind of can be a problem. So these are the things that, you know, have been my major issues. But I'm glad to say that there are no more issues. We're tackling them.
How were you able to tackle them, girl?
So I had to be resilient. I had to just know what I want, keep my eyes on the prize and just be focused. I basically do not let anything derail me from what I want to achieve and from my work. And then number two, you have to identify a support system. So I have a support system in the office at my workplace, and I have a support system at home. I have so many people around me that pick me up when I'm down. And even in the office, if anything happens, I have colleagues who are there to guide me, who are there to advise me, who are there to, you know, if I make mistakes at my job, they pick me up and they say, okay, it's fine. Everybody makes mistakes. So my message to the younger audience is, number one, get a mentor. So get someone who has more experience than you do. And then number two is you just have to be resilient. You have to try to be unique, try to stand out, try to create content that people have not created before. You have to just be different.
Fabulous. You are fabulous.
Thank you.
Madina Dahiru Mishanu from BBC Hausa. This is the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Wir alle wissen, dass Bewegung sehr wichtig ist. Für Selbstbewusstsein bis Achtsamkeit. Das ist der Grund, warum sich Elle und Nike auch für die dritte Staffel von Why I Move zusammengetan haben. Ein Podcast rund um das Thema Frauen, Wellness und natürlich Bewegung. Also gönnen Sie sich eine Pause, atmen Sie tief ein und hören Sie Why I Move.
I'm Farnak Amidi and you are with The Fifth Floor. Can you imagine being granted an honorary citizenship of a country as a birthday gift? I guess yes, if you are Stevie Wonder. The iconic African-American singer-songwriter was given Ghanaian citizenship on his 74th birthday by the nation's president. My colleague, Thomas Noddy of BBC Africa, a fellow Ghanaian himself, went and interviewed the legend.
Oh, yes.
Oh my
I was
gosh.
Very excited to finally see Stevie in flesh.
Were you starstruck?
Yes, I was. He was very calm, ever smiling and affable. In fact, when I sat down with him to do the interview, it was one of the highlights of my professional career. I've interviewed presidents, but I never thought in my wildest imagination that I will one day interview Stevie, the Wonder Man.
I love this. So, because he seems to have had this like love affair with Ghana for ages. But why does he love Ghana so much?
Well, he says he's met during his visits different people, traditional leaders. He's met people in political leadership. He specifically spoke about his experience with late former president Jerry John Rawlings, who made him a co-pilot and then took him around the country from the south to the north. And so the kind of warmth and then hospitality that he receives in Ghana anytime he visits, I think that's what has endeared him to this country.
For years I've talked about being in Ghana. I started talking about it in like 1973. When I first came, the first time I felt the essence of it as if I had been here before. And I said, this is where I need to be.
Even 3 years ago, when he had this interview with Oprah Winfrey, indicated that he wanted to relocate to Ghana to escape racial tensions in America. So this is actually a dream come true for him.
Thomas, you went to the press conference after the ceremony that made Stevie Wonder a Ghanaian citizen. Tell me about it. How was it? What was the atmosphere like? And what was Stevie like?
He wore this golden kaftan outfit made from traditional fabric.
And it was gorgeous, that, by the way.
Yeah, very gorgeous. I'm sure you saw the pictures.
I did.
After he took the oath, he was given a traditional stool and a scarf made from traditional Kente cloth. And that is symbolic because the traditional stool is normally used as a symbol of chieftaincy.
What was the reaction in Ghana? Are people talking about it? Were they excited about it?
A lot of people are actually excited in Ghana. No, he's very popular in this country. He was met at the airport upon arrival with traditional drumming and dancing. He even tried his hand at one of the traditional drums, and he played it so well. No, Stevie is a man of many talents.
Wow, he is.
And now you go to social media in Ghana today, Nigeria and Ghana have had this deep-seated rivalry in the sports and entertainment industry.
And jollof.
Yes, popular jollof. By the way, Ghana jollof is the best. I had to be biased here.
I knew you would say that.
So when Stevie was granted Ghanaian citizenship, some Ghanaians took to social media to say that, well, Ghana now has 25 Grammy Awards. Where are you, Nigeria? Nigeria can go to sleep.
This is amazing. I love this. Yeah. So funny.
And then also on the political front, Ghana's Interior Ministry said Wonder becoming a citizen marked a significant milestone in the country's effort to attract diasporan Africans. You know, the government of Ghana has been promoting this idea of the Year of Return, which was launched in 2019. And that was meant to encourage a lot of Africans in the diaspora to return home, either to relocate or to come and invest in Ghana. So a lot of African Americans have been coming to Ghana. And there's a town called Asiebu in the coastal areas of southern Ghana. And there, the chief has given lands to any African-American who wish to relocate and to settle in Ghana.
So do you think after this, now that Stevie Wonder has been granted a citizenship in Ghana, more African-American diaspora will come to Ghana to reconnect with the land?
And Stevie is not, he's just the latest African-American icon to come to this country. We know that W.E.B. Du Bois moved to Ghana and was buried here in 1963. Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, and Muhammad Ali have all visited. And so a lot of people, especially with the Year of Return initiative, a lot of African-Americans are expected to visit this country.
Thanks to Thomas Nnadi, speaking to me from Accra. I'm Farenike Amidi, and the Fifth Floor team this week was Alice Joya and Caroline Ferguson. The sound engineers were Donald McDonald and Duncan Hennant. You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
Wir alle wissen, dass Bewegung sehr wichtig ist. Für Selbstbewusstsein bis Achtsamkeit. Das ist der Grund, warum sich Elle und Nike auch für die dritte Staffel von Why I Move zusammengetan haben. Ein Podcast rund um das Thema Frauen, Wellness und natürlich Bewegung. Also gönnen Sie sich eine Pause, atmen Sie tief ein und hören Sie Why I Move.